So imagine that you're a system administrator, and this is where you work. You provide network services to your customers. You even provide wireless services, both inside and outside, so people can go out lunch, work around the edge. What if your customer is out there? No, I don't mean the deer. What if the distance between here and there is 775 meters? Or for those of you like me that aren't familiar with SI, 2,545 feet, almost a half a mile. Is this even possible? I mean, where are you going to find a power source? How are you going to connect a network drop? If you put equipment out in the middle of a field, in the middle of nowhere, how are you going to protect it? Environment, small animals, and by the way, you only have about 3 weeks to get this done. So I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. As Carolyn mentioned, I work at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Some of my customers that I support are robotics engineers. In this particular case, our engineers were working with DARPA. DARPA had some contractors come into NIST and run some robotic trials of autonomous vehicles. Now, NIST is known for its unique terrain features. We have ponds, we have trees, we have flatlands, we have hills. Yes, and we have geese. We even have a geese patrol that comes in to manage the geese. And we have lots of deer, as you can see. So anyways, we have a lot of unique terrain features, and it makes an ideal environment in which to run robotic trials. So in this case, we were just asked to provide a network connection. So our engineers came to us and said, we got DARPA coming in. They're going to be in this building. Can you give them an internet connection? I said, well, how hard is that? We hand them a wire. They're good to go, right? Well, not exactly. It had to be what we call a visitor net connection. We're not going to let an outside contractor come in and just have access to our warm, squishy interior servers and services. So we just need to hand them a wire that gets them out to the internet. We said, well, we can do that. I mean, we have a wireless visitor net infrastructure in place. That's not an issue. We'll just set up wireless, put an access point out in the building, and they can connect. Except they had a couple of boxes that had no wireless capability, and we had to give them a wire. Well, this particular building did not have a wired internet connection. So we thought about it and said, you know, if we take a workgroup bridge, that's going to convert our wireless connection back into a wired, and we can just hand them that, and it should work. And it did. So for the first time they came out, that's exactly what we did. The second time they came out, they went back to the same building, but they said, hey, would it be possible to get that wireless signal across the street? It's only 30 or 40 feet. Not that big a deal. And we said, well, you know, it really isn't that big a deal. If we just use a different type of access point, maybe one that has external antenna capability, we'll just slap on a directional antenna, and we can shoot that out the door right about there, and we'll get that 40 feet across the street. And so we did, and it worked. Then they came back and said, yeah, how about down the street and across the pond behind the trees? We'd never done that before. This is a map of the southeast corner of the NIST campus. This area right over here is actually a commercial shopping center. So this corner of the campus is bound by the highway right here and this four-lane access road. We were asked to provide network services at approximately this location. So you can see it's pretty much out in the middle of nowhere. And our first thought is, where's our nearest network drop? How are we going to find it? So we contacted our network team and said, can you tell us where the nearest network drop is? And after consulting their maps and charts, they said, well, it's right about here. Only here was in an access tunnel under a manhole cover. And in order to get access to that network connection, we had to contact the fiber contractor who had to come in and run a special drop. And he only worked on Thursdays, and today was Wednesday, and he's leaving on vacation for 2 weeks. So we said, well, do we really need this connection? Is this what we're going to hang our hat on? Our thought was, if we take an external access point, we can take a wireless shot, and we can probably hit our target area right there. But let's make sure, because, you know, it looks good on the map. So we actually went out and we walked around, and we found that there was a terrain depression right about there, which would have effectively blocked any access point on the other side of the street, and it just wouldn't have worked, because we were thinking, hey, we need to get good line of sight here. So plan B. Instead of trying to stick our access point where we originally thought we wanted, we realized we had to get some height. So we said, what better height than the rooftop of a building? Now, we didn't use the nearest building because administratively and going through all the red tape, it would have been a little bit more challenging. So we chose the rooftop of our administrative headquarters. It was a lot easier to access and easy to secure permissions to get up there and start working. This is a view from the roof. Much higher, much easier to get line of sight. You can see our target area somewhere out there. But we had a nice little clear shot through the trees. So while we're on the roof, you notice this building right here. When this building was built, they put up a steel support structure on the roof we were standing on, and they hung some web cameras up so that they could document the construction of the building. You've all seen those videos where the building gets, you know, built in 3 years, but they flash it up and you watch it in 20 minutes, something like that. This building has already been up for 5 years now, so there's no more need for the cameras, but they left the steel support structure. So we contacted our public and business affairs people and said, hey, do you think we could use your structure? This is going to be great. We can put some antennas on it, some wireless access points. I think this will be ideal for our needs. And they came back and said, sure, no problem. We're not using it. Knock yourself out. So that was a big worry that we didn't have to look into anymore. Didn't have to worry about sandbags, tripods, all that kind of stuff. So we said, okay, what are we going to put up there to get this signal way out there? Because we had never done this before. So we started with what we had. In this case, it was a 1240 series AG access point. We started with this because it did have the external antenna connections. And we put on a directional antenna, walked our laptops down to the target area. Our performance just wasn't what we were expecting. We got roughly about 80 kilobits per second, not the greatest throughput. So we realized we needed to get some more power and a little bit increased directionality in our antenna. We contacted some Cisco engineers and said, hey, here's our problem. This is what we're trying to do. And we got together some access points and some antennas and basically had ourselves a good old shootout. So we went back up on the roof. We started with a 1300 series outdoor access point. This had an integrated antenna. We didn't need the external one for this particular one. Has a horizontal beam width spread of roughly about 38 degrees. It worked much better than what we started with, but still didn't give us the performance we were looking for. So we tried the same device, but then used a 13.5 dBi external Yagi antenna. And again, the performance was better than the last time, but still not quite what we're looking for. So a little bit more discourse with the Cisco engineers. They said, you know what, let's go for the big guns. Doesn't look that large, but it's a 21 dBi gain parabolic dish antenna. And that, combined with our 1300 series outdoor access point, it gave us the bandwidth we need, only a 12 degree beam width spread, and it allowed us to really focus that signal and get the throughput that we needed. So that's what we did. We went back, we procured two of our outdoor series access points and two parabolic dish antennas. You may be thinking, why did you get two of them? Redundancy, perhaps? In hindsight, that would have been a good idea. Actually, we did have a spare. But in this case, if you think about it, it's not enough to get the signal out to your target area. You got to get the signal back as well. And you're not going to get that from a laptop out in the middle of a field. So we needed a good send-receive combination, and that's why we ordered two. Now, the rooftop configuration, we configured our 1300 series in an LWAP access point rule. We already have an enterprise wireless system running LWAP. LWAP is a lightweight access point protocol. It simply means you have a controller that can control the configuration and management of multiple access points. Although we had a Radius 802.1x infrastructure in place, we didn't have time to test it, so we just went with something simple. Something secure, we used WPA2 with pre-shared key. The mobile device was the only one that was going to be talking to our access point, so we felt comfortable with this using AES encryption. And of course, we connected our parabolic dish antenna. Now, on the mobile side, DARPA came out. They had a 24-foot container trailer, an enclosed trailer, roughly about 8 by 24, and it had a roof rack on it. So we took our second access point. We configured this as an autonomous work group bridge. Autonomous meaning it wasn't dependent on the central controller. It ran its own iOS operating system, but it was in a work group bridge role. You remember I mentioned a work group bridge will take that wireless signal, convert it to a wired signal, and then we just handed them the cable. And inside this trailer, they had some desks and chairs in their own network rack, and they just plugged it into their little Soho router, handed out some local NAT addresses, and they were up and running. Now, as far as power, I had done some research and knew that Honda provided some generators that use an inverter technology. It's a very clean sine wave 60 hertz AC output. You can plug a computer or a network device safely into it and run it all day long, and you're not going to get any kind of spikes or square waves or anything like that. So DARPA actually came out with two of these, and we were just able to access their power source. We didn't have to run that ourselves. With the outdoor series access points, rather than taking your Ethernet cable and your power cable and running it out in the grass or exposed to the elements, the outdoor series uses a power injector. It simply takes your power and your Ethernet and it converts it into a dual coax RG6 cable. If you have cable TV at home, it's the same kind of cable that you have running into your house. So you have power and signal running down this cable, and it's a thing of beauty. It just works. We did purchase an additional 60 meters of cable, and I'll talk about why in a second, but you can take this a maximum of 200 meters, which really gets you a long ways away from your power injector, which is protected inside, versus your outdoor access point, which is out in the elements. Safety is always an important thing. One thing we had to make sure we did is properly electrically ground our system. When you're keeping things outside for days and weeks at a time, you want to make sure it's properly grounded. So the manufacturer recommends a grounding block. We connected that back into our building ground, identified by our plant electrician, connected some heavy RG6 copper cable to this, and that took care of the grounding issue. Now, working out on the roof, we tried to make sure we worked in teams of two people so that you didn't have one person just walking out. You don't want to get blown off. Tools was one of my nightmares. When you're that close to the edge of a roof and you're working, you want to make sure that you don't accidentally drop a wrench from 40 feet up in the air on somebody's head. So I actually took some shoelaces and tied it to the end of the wrench, tied it to my belt loop, and I made sure I did not drop anything on anyone's head. So now we're all set. We're ready to go. We've tested it. We've talked to the engineers. We load all our equipment in our cart. This is a representation, obviously. We load all our equipment in the cart, and we pushed it over from our sysadmin lab over to the headquarters building where we had set up and done our testing on the roof. It's about a quarter-mile walk, and my colleague who's out in the audience today, David Pullman, and I, we pushed the cart over. We go down the hallway, and we hit the button for the elevator to go up to the third floor. And the elevator doors open. We kind of had to step back a little bit because some workmen were coming out. And they have steel pipe on their shoulder. And they come out. We get in the elevator and said, you know, that's not something you see every day. We didn't think too much of it. We get up to the third floor. Now, the roof still has another two stories to go. The elevator doesn't go that high. So we gather up our dish antenna and our access point, and we each take an armful and some cable, and we hike up two more stories, and we get to the top. We open the access door to the roof, and it's gone. Our steel support structure just got carried down the elevator by these workmen. They had disassembled it not 20 minutes before we got there. There's nothing left but a little pile of sand. So now what are we going to do? We have to deploy this in less than a week. We went up to set it up, to test it, to start aiming dishes. We're stuck. I'm thinking, can we call a welder? Where are we going to get this pipe? How do we reproduce this thing? So we were just kind of dumbstruck. We grabbed our stuff. We put it back in the cart. We went back down the elevator. And as we're walking back, we happened upon a large trash pile. And there was a wooden packing crate sitting there with a little sign, and it said, trash. So we knock on the door and said, hey, do you mind if we take this? And they said, sure, I guess. So we got a cart, we pushed it back to our lab office because we realized with a little bit of ingenuity, a little trip to the home improvement store, get a few supplies, a little bit of cutting here, a little bit of reinforcing there. By the way, we're actually in the hallway of our systems administration lab, safety goggles on, circular saw in hand, making a cut around this box, and my supervisor walks up. She looks at us and she says, "Do I really want to know?" We said, "Don't ask." She didn't. She just kept right on walking, and she knows now, but it all worked out. And there you have it. It's ugly, but it was perfectly functional. All we had to do was add sandbags, and we were ready to go. We had our steel support structure. On that tube, we were able to clamp our access point and our parabolic dish antenna, and we were all set up and ready to go. So the big day arrives, and DARPA comes out with their trailer, and I load the mobile device in my car. I'm ready to put it on the rack of their trailer, and I go out to the target site that they've identified, but the trailer's not there. So I grab the phone, and I make a call, and I said, "Where did you see these people were? This is the coordinates they sent me." "Well, they found another site. It's just a little bit further up the road, but it's a lot better. So if you can get your signal out there, that'd be great." Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. There's a little program called Google Earth, and it is your best friend in this case. Because all I had to do is say, "I am here. This is where I want to be. Compute a new azimuth. Run back up to the roof." And there we go. Now, as you can see, I'm thinking the whole time, we need line of sight to make this work. Well, we're hitting some trees right here, right here. I don't know how well that shows up. We had no line of sight. But it worked because we had procured the proper equipment. We had very controlled beam width spread on our antenna pattern. We had the power that we needed. And so despite all of the blockages of the terrain, we were still able to get a very solid 54 meg lock on our wireless signal. So the next time they came out, they were a little bit closer to home, but you couldn't even see the trailer. I mean, they were behind a tree and down in a depression. And I said, "You know, I don't even want to try and shoot through all that garbage." But we had this additional cable. So I just made a few more coax cables. We extended that out. And we took our access point and mounted it on a picnic table right about here. Ran the coax cable back to the power injector in the trailer, and it just worked. The last three times they came out, they were close to where they were the first time. And again, it didn't take anything but just figure out where we were, where the azimuth was, and we make another shot. But as you can see, we're going through several sets of trees. This is the view from the roof where we were looking. Our testing site is somewhere about there. This white tower that you can see there, that's actually across the street beyond that shopping center. So it was a little bit before that. But we had no direct line of sight, and yet this thing just worked. That still boggles my brain to this day. Now, throughout the process, we needed to make sure we kept things legal. The FCC regulates the amount of output from a wireless device. In this case, it was 30 dBm. You have to not only consider the power output of your wireless access point, but also the gain of your antenna and any cable losses that you have. So in this case, we had to reduce the power so that we did not exceed that 30 dBm threshold. So I'm almost out of time, but I just want to cover a couple lessons learned. Number one, you're going to need a lot more sandbags than you think you do. I say this because anytime there was a weather event, a windstorm, rain, what have you, I could not sleep at night because I had visions of a gust of wind grabbing this dish, ripping the whole thing off the roof, dumping it upside down, and dropping this steel pole through my lab director's windshield. So about 2 weeks after we set this up, I went back to my local home improvement store, bought another 200 pounds of sandbags, and on a weekend, I lugged them back up the two stories, and I dropped them on top of the original 300 pounds that we'd already put there. You think it's overkill, but a year and a half later, when I went back, there was one sandbag left that actually had integrity. All the rest of the sandbags, the outside of it had disintegrated, and there was nothing left but a big, huge, heaping pile of sand. It wouldn't have taken a couple more windstorms, and that thing just would have eroded away, and there would have been nothing left but a big box. So, temporary solutions aren't always temporary. If it works, don't think, oh, well, we'll do it the right way the next time, because the next time is just already there, and you don't have time, and fires come up, and you run to put them out. Well, I'll just use this one more week, just one more month, just two more months. And it was out there for about a year and a half. But it never fell over, and it did exactly what we had designed it to do. Be flexible, or as I like to say, semper gumby. I never would have thought that a wooden packing crate in Google Earth could have been used to be turned into an enterprise wireless solution that was actively used and in place for a year and a half. And it worked flawlessly. I mean, we had good bandwidth. There was no video dropout. We tacked on a voice over IP phone. It cost me about $6 to set the service up. Everything that we wanted this thing to do, it just did, because we had talked to the proper people and acquired the appropriate gear. So that's our story. It was a journey, but we got through it, and we're here to talk about it. And at this time, I'll take any questions.
Hi, I'm Jay from Rackspace. Just a quick question. You mentioned weather in the context of worrying about your dish falling over, but was the signal strong enough to maintain integrity if it was actually raining while they were trying to do their experiments?
That's a good question. My biggest fear was the box falling off the roof. We operated normally they didn't do any tests or trials during the rain because they didn't want their robots running out there and getting wet. So I don't think we had any experience with actual running it in the rain. Obviously, it rained in that year and a half period, so there was no physical damage to the equipment. It's made to handle the elements. It never went down on us at any time. But I don't have any experience working it in the rain.
So on the keeping it simple note, why weren't you able to just get the workmen to undo the breaking your entire system?
I wish we could have. Unfortunately, they had a maintenance work order that had been on the books for about 6 months that said, tear this thing down, and they had just gotten to it. It was one of those things where they actually cut the pipe apart and carried it down. So
it would have taken 6 months for them to get to the point of putting it back.
Yes, because, federal government, red tape, I can't just go up there and put my own device up.
Hey, Paul Gunn from Weta Digital here. A lot of this sounds really familiar to me because the people who work on the productions making movies have to do this all the time. I've luckily never had to do it, but my colleagues have had to run wireless over hills in snow in the middle of rural Hungary or in Fjordland. For people who don't know where that is, big hills, very damp. The message they gave me from the troubles they had is when your satellite system uplink works during the day and doesn't work at night, turn the fluorescent lights off in the trailer. Very important. Whole days wasted.
This trailer, I don't think, had any lighting to speak of. It may have had a single 60-watt bulb hanging from it, but that's a very good point to remember. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Dan McQueen. I'm from Cisco. I was wondering, how much did you have to turn down the radio? Because I know that you can get an awful lot of power with a smaller gain antenna than what you were using.
I think we had it throttled back somewhere between 30 to 40% of its total available output. I don't remember the exact number, but we did have to throttle it back quite a bit, not to exceed the 30 dBm threshold.
So what would you do different next time?
Say no. No. One thing in hindsight that I go back and look at is, why did I configure this as a wireless access point? Why didn't I just use this in bridge mode? Bridge mode would have given me so much more power with the right antenna and the right point-to-point configuration. They're rated and designed to go for miles at a time. At the time, we were asked to provide a wireless signal, and I wanted this operating as an access point. And during the trials, we actually had people that did actually just use the one side of our setup. They took a wireless signal from the roof mount. They never went through the wired network that was in the trailer. So I guess in retrospect, the way we had it set up was the proper way. If we had set up with a root bridge and a another bridge in the field, that may not have given us the most flexibility that we needed at the time.
Razvan Musalavi from Google. So a small comment. We did something similar for a wireless sensor network where we had to actually reach two towers that were like hundreds of meters away. And it was in, we were working with the Smithsonian Institute. So we were visitors in their network.
Right.
And the solution for us, we solved a lot of headaches, was to use Meraki, a mesh network company that were doing wireless stuff. And we just run their stuff. It was cloud computing and stuff, but for our point of view, was so much simpler in terms of configuration and things. And we used the Yagi antennas, actually. We didn't go for the big guns because the towers were very high, so we had direct line of sight. So anyway, just as a, it was a very nice story. I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot of other ways that we could have done this. Again, the time element was very short, and this is a perfect definition of what I call scope creep, because it started out, we need this, and it ended up, we provided that, and we never expected to be where we were going to be in such a short time frame, so we had to kind of get creative with what we had to do to make it work.